The WNBA suspension of Leah Thomas and the ESPN commentary from Chinee Ogwumike is a story that has generated intense heat and relatively little light. Ogwumike, who is both an ESPN analyst and the WNBA Players Association president, which is itself a significant dual role to note, argued that the suspension was driven by optics rather than basketball judgment. The WNBA has not provided detailed public reasoning for the suspension, which is what opened space for Ogwumike's interpretation to gain traction.
The broader context is that Thomas's eligibility and participation have been contested at every level of competition since her collegiate career. The WNBA's handling of this case will set precedents for how professional sports leagues navigate similar cases going forward. Ogwumike's willingness to publicly criticize the league's decision-making as both a media figure and union leader is unusual and suggests she sees the governance question as important enough to risk league relationships over.
Moving to governance stories, the Trump White House ballroom, built under a $500 million no-bid contract, is the kind of procurement story that would generate congressional investigations under different political conditions. The Washington Post's finding that the contract was routed through a White House office specifically exempt from competitive bidding rules raises straightforward questions about why standard procurement procedures were bypassed for a project of that scale.
The Hegseth and Rubio signal story that both Defense Secretary Hegseth and Secretary of State Rubio continued using auto-deleting signal messages after the earlier scandal about classified information on signal is extraordinary in its casualness. The Federal Records Act requires preservation of official communications. Auto-deleting messages used for official government business is not a technical workaround. It's a legal problem. The fact that they reportedly kept using it after the issue had already become public suggests either a legal theory about signal status under the FRA or a judgment that enforcement risk is low.
The California streaming ad volume law, taking effect Wednesday, is a small consumer protection story, but worth noting as a policy model. SB 576 extends the rules that already apply to broadcast TV, where ads can't be louder than the accompanying programming, to streaming platforms. It's the kind of consumer annoyance that affects essentially everyone who watches streaming video, and that the streaming platforms themselves chose not to self-regulate.
The First Bank of the United States reopening in Philadelphia after a $43 million renovation is one of those good news cultural stories that deserves a moment. The building where Alexander Hamilton's national banking vision was first institutionalized, where the concept of a central banking system for the new republic was tested, is welcoming visitors again. Hamilton's argument for a national bank, that federal creditworthiness required a central financial institution, was fiercely contested at the time, primarily by Jefferson, who saw it as unconstitutional overreach. The building itself is a physical argument about what the federal government became.
And James Carville's call for Democrats to formally distance themselves from Democratic socialists following the New York City primary results is the kind of intra-party strategic memo that shapes campaign positioning for the next 18 months. Carville's argument, essentially, is that the NYC sweep by more progressive candidates is a primary phenomenon that will create general election vulnerabilities. Whether that analysis is correct depends heavily on which districts and turnout models you credit.
Now let's do our what if we're wrong exercise for today, and I want to apply it to something we've been presenting with considerable confidence throughout this episode. The narrative that Ukraine's drone strikes on Russian refineries are systematically degrading Russia's war funding capacity.
It's a compelling narrative, and it has real evidence behind it. 8 of 10 refineries hit, documented by satellite imagery and Ukrainian military communications. So what's the counter-argument?
Here's where I'd push back on our own certainty. First, Russia has demonstrated throughout this conflict an ability to adapt industrial production under adversity that Western analysts consistently underestimated. Russian oil export revenue in the first half of 2026 has been lower, yes, but Russia has also shifted export patterns, increased crude oil sales to India and China at discount prices, and maintained military production at levels that have surprised analysts. Second, there's a substitution question. Striking a refinery reduces refined product output, but Russia can import refined products from allies or increase crude exports and redirect the revenue. The assumption that refinery damage directly translates to reduced military capacity involves several links in a chain, each of which could be weaker than we think.
And there's a third issue. What does HIT actually mean in operational terms? A drone strike that causes a fire in a processing unit may be repaired within weeks. A strike that destroys core distillation infrastructure takes much longer. We don't always have granular data on damage severity from the outside.
If we're wrong about the strategic impact, what would we expect to see? We'd watch for Russian military production numbers in the second half of 2026. If artillery shell and missile output stays at or above the levels seen in the first half, that would suggest the refinery strikes haven't produced the financial squeeze the narrative implies. We'd also watch Russian crude oil export volumes, if they're rising, as a compensating strategy. It would suggest Moscow has found a workaround that limits the effectiveness of the refinery campaign.
The indicator to track specifically, if Russia's monthly military expenditure as a share of GDP, reported through their finance ministry, stays above 6% in Q3 and Q4 of 2026, the drone campaign hasn't been as decisive as the prevailing narrative suggests.